Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I am a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School. And normally at this point, I say I'm doing this with my compatriot, Brendan Berry, who is calling me on the phone even as we speak. So,
okay.
Obviously, he's
well, you could
a
talk
time
to him.
On.
And you could talk to him.
Hold on.
Because
I'm,
there was
I'm
a problem. So ask him to call in again. I'm sorry. It's my fault at my end. We had a power outage. Okay. Well, this is going to be a very exciting day because so much has happened. So that's going to be really very interesting.
Okay, I'm back. He's going to call
I'm
in
glad
right
you
now.
Are. Okay,
yeah,
that's
okay.
Perfect.
So I'm back.
I'm back.
He'll be here shortly. I do this show.
Well, I'm
with
so
my,
thrilled because this is such an important and monumentous day. There's so much that's happening. I don't know if we have enough time to cover it all. Oh, that'll be perfect.
Yeah, we'll
wait for Brendan to call. He'll be calling shortly, so that'll be fine.
All right, let me do my disclaimer.
Okay.
The show that Brendan and I do, and he is also a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School. We're both at the Tampa Bay campus, and I'm supposed to say to you that everything that Brendan and I say and the opinions that we espouse are our opinions and ours alone, or together alone, but are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of the school of the WMU Cooley Law School. Its faculty, either as individuals or at large. Brendan's probably not on yet, so
no, he
say
is.
Hello
he
to
is.
Him.
Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
My apology, Brendan.
That's okay, but I'm a little bit mad at Jeff's favorite British accent voice for hanging up on me like that. That was kind of, you know.
Well, you're just not nice to her like I am.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If you were nice to her and complimented her and told her that she should probably be the Queen of England, everything would be fine.
I was summarily dismissed.
Well, no, I don't think it was summarily. It was so merrily.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Both.
So, good morning. I've already done all the intros. Everybody that has not listened up to this point and does not know who Brendan is but heard me talking about him, this is the Brendan Berry I was just talking about. Okay?
Yes.
Not that you can see him, but he really does exist. How's that sound? This is a not-so-funny story. I'm about to tell, but I think I'm going to tell it anyway. Apparently, there's this guy down in Miami who apparently walked into a highly democratic area of Little Havana. He is himself Cuban, and Cuban-American, and he's too young to have actually been a Cuban. Apparently, he walked in wearing this Marco Rubio shirt, and four people that lived in the neighborhood, best we can tell, took great offense at his shirt. And I don't condone this. I mean, they beat the ever-living you-know-what out of him. Apparently, they broke his jaw, and his occipital lobe, apparently, the bone is going to have to get reset, and they kicked him around pretty good. Apparently saying words like, we don't want Republicans in this neighborhood. And Marco Rubio goes online, and he shows a picture of the guy in a hospital bed. And he says, last night one of our canvassers bearing my T-shirt and a DeSantis hat, what a combo. I mean, he's such a well-dressed guy. Was brutally attacked by four animals who told him Republicans aren't allowed in their neighborhood. Okay, and he describes the guy's injuries. Ted Cruz jumped on, and he said, of course, and reshared shared it as proof, that tolerant Democrats are not so tolerant after all. This was all done in spite of the police report, which, the the author of this article that I'm reading from, Laura Bassett, said, "I smelled a rat, especially considering that in Hialeah, Florida, it is so overwhelmingly," it wasn't Little Havana, it was Hialeah, which is big Havana, is almost 95% Hispanic and 95% Republican. And so they started looking into this guy, and they found out his name was Christopher Monzone, a white supremacist nicknamed, quote, Cuban Confederate, close quote, who participated in the neo-Nazi rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, and has a history of violence. But he's also deeply involved in Miami Republican politics, which tells you that, you know, if you're violent, you're welcome in the Republican Party. He has a at the time that this happened, he was out on bond for a felony. And he allegedly told this guy, one of the defendants said, "You can't pass by here. This is my neighborhood," before slamming him to the ground. But it doesn't mention a political dispute, nor does it indicate that that they were targeting Monzone because he was a Republican. It just seems kind of weird, knowing, unfortunately, the violence that takes place in Hialeah, that this guy was taken out because he was wearing a Marco Rubio T-shirt and a DeSantis hat. It's not funny, but it's funny how Republicans will jump on any opportunity to conflate this behavior, which was probably a personal argument between these people, and politics, simply because their name was on a T-shirt. If there's anything we've learned that Democrats don't commit violence against Republicans. Not because they're afraid, it's just they're too smart to do it. If there's one thing we've learned from this election in the last 4 years, is that Democrats don't commit violence against Republicans. Yes, there were riots after the George Floyd verdict. But that was a social outrage. It was not a political outrage. You don't see that. You will not see Democrats coming to Washington with their guns and demanding that their guy win, even if they lost. That will not happen. And the idea that he was beat up, if Democrats really wanted to go after somebody, go after Marco. I just, you know, he doesn't show up in Little Havana until he needs votes. Which brings me to a point that I do not understand. This amazement of the media that Hispanics, meaning Cubans, in South Florida, they're just amazed at this. Cuban Americans are overwhelmingly Republican. Overwhelmingly Republican. Because they still hold a grudge from 60 years ago. John F. Kennedy abandoned the Bay of Pigs invaders. And from that point on, they were always going to be Republicans. It is their unifying voice. Despite the fact Cuban radio is supporting, is against what DeSantis did to the Venezuelans, 50% of Cubans in Miami are in favor of DeSantis and favor what he did to the Venezuelans. That's their bias and their prejudice. Cuban Americans are incredibly biased and incredibly prejudiced. Now, that's a massive, shall we say, generalization. But when you look at them and you talk to Cuban Americans, they have something bad to say about just about every other Spanish-speaking nationality. There seems to be this arrogance about Cuban Americans in South Florida. This is their world, this is their country, stay out of it. If you speak Spanish and you're not Cuban, go somewhere else. That's their attitude. So I'm not surprised by some of this, but I don't know why the media is so surprised that Spanish-speaking citizens in Miami-Dade County are voting Republican. I would be amazed if they didn't. I would be flabbergasted if they didn't. It means that the older generation died off in a red tide or something. So that's what I think this morning. I just thought I'd bring that article up and then get into my rejection of what they're saying on television regarding Cuban Americans voting Republican and their amazement over it. It's your turn, Brendan.
Yeah, I saw the story. I saw some headline about this guy who got beat up, but I didn't know the whole story. So I'm glad you clarified that. And it's pretty remarkable. You say Rubio is calling this guy a canvasser. Is that right? He actually went that far.
Yeah, he says he was one of his canvassers. Was okay. Out going door to door, and got beat up by some people. It could have been gang related. We don't know. But to sit there and say it was because he was wearing a Marco Rubio shirt,
mm-hmm.
I just really doubt that.
Yeah.
In Hialeah, which is 90% Republican,
right?
Because it's Cuban American,
mm-hmm.
and those two go together. It's just silly. I mean, it's not like the armed poll worker in Arizona. An armed poll worker in Arizona who was monitoring how people were voting.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking at their ballots before they were put through the machine and got confronted by a voter. He's armed. He's carrying a gun. Okay, it's not like that, so please.
Right. Yeah. Let's So
I know who you want to go after, so go ahead.
No, this one will catch you by surprise. When I was thinking about what I want to say, there's something that I heard recently that's been bothering me for over a week that I thought, let me get this off my chest this morning.
No wonder you've been in a bad mood.
Yeah, you think I've been in a bad mood? You know why I'm in a bad mood. It's your fault.
I know why you're in a bad mood, but now I understand even more.
Okay. Yeah, right. Oh, God. So a while back, I was driving back home from a night class, and I had NPR on the radio, and that turned out to be a mistake. And I actually wound up changing. I changed the station. I couldn't take it anymore. But their NPR decided, I don't know why, that it would be a good idea to have people on who simply refused to vote. And they did a little piece on people who just refused to vote. Because this is your classic thing that we always talk about, both sides ism and false equivalents. And, they're all scoundrels, so what difference does it make?
In other words, they're going to go vote for Republicans. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. Or at least let a Republican win, right, by sitting it out.
Yeah.
But so they have this one guy calls in to talk about how he doesn't vote. And here's what he said. And this is when I just had to change the channel. I said, I can't take this anymore. I can't listen to this and still drive responsibly. So this guy says, what's the difference? And I'm going to come back to that question. What's the difference? He says, what, on one side, you got an old white senile guy. And on the other side, you got an old white senile guy who just wants to do a lot of bad things. So what's the difference? Okay, let me repeat that. He says on one side is an old senile white guy, and on the other side is an old senile white guy who wants to do a lot of bad things. So what's the difference? Okay. Shall we help out our friend Sherlock? Should we get out a whiteboard? Let's get out a whiteboard and draw two columns, okay? All right, let's go. So over here on the left, let's put the word old, okay, and then the word senile, and then the word white. Okay, now let's go over to the right column, and let's put the word old, the word senile, and the word white. But let's add something else, who wants to do a lot of bad things. Now, Jeff, when you were a little kid, when I was a little kid, I religiously watched Sesame Street. Did you watch Sesame Street as a child?
Well, no, because Sesame Street did not exist when I was a little kid.
I was afraid that might be the case.
I watched Rin Tin Tin. I watched Superman. Okay. I watched Sky King. Okay, those are the shows that I watched. They didn't have Sesame Street when I was a kid, which is probably why, you know, I probably was slow learning how to read. But go ahead.
Did your kids watch Sesame Street?
Yeah, of course.
When they were little kids?
Show. I did watch The Muppet Show. Is that the same thing?
No. Sesame Street's much more educational. listeners will know that there's I still remember this. As a kid, my favorite part of Sesame Street was when they would play this game called "Which one of these things is not like the others?" Right, and they would show that they usually show four boxes, right? And so, in one box there'd be a glove, and in another box there'd be a sock, and then in another box there'd be like a pair of shorts, and then in the fourth box there'd be a hamburger, right? And so you're supposed to, you know, figure out which one of these things is not like the others. There's a little ditty that goes along with it. Which one of these things is not like the others? Blah, 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 blah. And I would always get it right, and was very proud of myself, right? So let's play that with our non-voter, okay? The left column has three items on it. The right column has four items on it. Which one of these things is not like the others? This idiot says, I'm not going to vote because one guy is an old white senile guy, and the other side is an old white senile guy who wants to do a lot of bad things, and he is so dull that he fails Sesame Street. He can't even reason his way past Sesame Street.
Wait, I didn't know they gave grades. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm grading now on the Sesame Street scale, right? This guy has less brains than a three-year-old. I've said for a long time, when the democracy ends in America, you can trace it to, there was a lot of things you can trace it to, but ignorance what are you supposed to do with people like this? They sit around, you watch what happens on January 6th, you listen to the way with Republican rhetoric, you see a party trying to steal elections, and you say, what's the difference? I don't know how you deal with that level of stupidity. That's what I really think.
I understand what you're trying to pass on to us. It's sorry about that. That's my printer going in the background. I was trying to get an article printed because I wanted to talk about it. First of all, I don't know how you fail Sesame Street. It's probably possible. Especially in Florida, where probably you see some of Sesame Street on the FCAT test so that these kids can pass and go on to the next grade. On Sesame Street, they said the following, okay? I'm sure that that's there. But, yeah, I understand what you're trying to say. I don't see the difference between one's angry and one's not, but they're both senile, right? Is that basically the story? Yeah, I got it. One of them is competent. One is not competent. One is just an angry guy all about grievance and the victim of everything because, you know, being a loser doesn't fit his criteria, even though he's one of the world's greatest political losers over a six-year span. I understand how stupid it is. But, you know, don't give up on NPR. You don't hang up on NPR. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
I had to keep the car on the road. Okay, I couldn't listen to this anymore. Yeah.
Okay. We got so many things to talk about. The first thing I want to talk about, this is just sort of a kind of a newsy item. We all know who Kash Patel is, right? The former chief of staff to the Secretary of Defense, Christopher Miller, who was put in place there because he could not get confirmed to anything. So he kept getting moved from job to job as an acting this and an acting that. And for some reason or another, this guy literally meditates to the vision of Donald Trump. And he claimed at one point that he actually saw and heard Donald Trump declassify all the government records that were found at Mar-a-Lago. Now, he saw him. He saw him wave his magic wand, okay, and do that, even though as a person who works at the Department of Justice, he knows that's not how it works, okay, because the other thing was he was left out. A lot of times he was left out of the classified information in the position that he was in. Even as deputy chief of staff, couldn't be the chief of staff, but the deputy chief of staff to the Secretary of Defense, apparently he was left out of a lot of stuff because he couldn't get past a security clearance. And when he went in to testify before the Mar-a-Lago grand jury, or whatever grand jury he was in front of, and he was asked about these documents, he took the Fifth Amendment, refused to testify, even though he publicly said these things. Why? Because if he said anything different, it would have been disclosed that he was lying to the public. If he told the truth, then he obviously was lying to the public. If he said the same things he said on the record, obviously, the government had him on perjury, and as a result of which he decided, I think the best thing that I can do, okay, is not talk about this sweeping reclassification order that he was aware of that did not exist, and just take the Fifth Amendment. So I thought that was interesting, which leads me into all things Trump real fast. First of all, I told you about the armed poll worker that worked for the Republican Party. We talk about the new Trump tapes. This is a book that I don't have to read. I can just listen to it and be amused by it or horrified by it while driving down the road, because I can drive down the road and be disturbed about things and still do it responsibly.
I'll believe that when I see it. you're a case of road rage waiting to happen. Come on.
I am the rage. These tapes are just absolutely damning. It is frigging unbelievable. He is showing highly classified documents. We're talking about eyes-only documents to Woodward and talking about them on a tape recorder because he knows everything's being taped. He has an audience in the room. Every time he's on the phone with Woodward, there's an audience in the room, whether it's whatever employee there, one of his kids. He has people that work there. He's got, you know, Stephen Miller. He's got others. Okay. Am I off the air?
No.
Really? You knocked me off the air, Hezzy. Are we on the air? Brendan, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, I don't know whether we're both off the air or whether Hezzy just decided to hang up. I think he just hung up. I don't know. That's a good point. Marilyn, if you're listening, send me a text message if we're off the air or on the air, okay? But we'll keep talking anyway. Just in case we are.
Yeah, just in case.
Obviously, you know, this damning evidence, I mean, unbelievable damning evidence. Okay, I can't see how we're on the air. If we got disconnected by him, we're not on the air. Let me see. No, shows I'm still hooked up to Hezzy. So he hooked up. We're good, I guess.
All right.
Okay.
Good.
He says, we are on. Thank you, Marilyn. She's so helpful.
That is helpful. Yeah. Thanks. Hi, Marilyn. How you doing?
Helpful. Yeah. See, you got a hello from everybody. Okay. She's planning my birthday for Thursday. She won't tell me anything about it. Okay.
Oh, boy.
She won't tell me what. She won't tell me the present. She won't even tell me we're going to dinner. She won't tell me anything. I'm just supposed to pick her up and then she's going to give me directions on where to go. I said, how am I supposed to dress? She says, any way you want. Okay? Okay, so I'll wear a bathing suit. Okay.
Oh, and, God.
You know, in a lifeguard shirt or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, right.
So incredible damning things about the election, about what he knew or didn't know. He is so busy trying to impress Bob Woodward, who has written three absolutely scathing books about this guy. It trashed him like you wouldn't believe. But he wants to impress him. So he starts telling him all kinds of things he doesn't tell anybody else. And actually, when he was asked whether he was going to appear in front of the January 6th committee, he wouldn't answer the question. He said, the people here told me not to answer the question. So his lawyers were sitting there, too, trying to keep him from talking too much, which is trying to hold back the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get these tapes. I got to listen to these things in the car. It'll keep me occupied, okay,
yeah,
while I'm riding in the car, no matter where I'm going. It's like 8.5 hours of listening.
Are they all released right now?
Oh, yeah, they're released. You can pick them up. You can pick them up on Audible. You can pick them up on Amazon. And he's been talking, and he said his attitude was, I wrote a book. I write articles about this. But you just don't get the flavor
until
you hear that voice. And you hear the way he says things, not just what he says, but the way he says them. So he said, I've never done this before. I never give up my tapes. They're my research. But in this case, this guy's so dangerous that you need to hear how he really talks. Not how he talks when he goes to a rally, how he really talks about the things he does. So he's got this 8.5 hours, and I'm really looking forward to listening to them. Of course, I can only listen to them in a small dose because it's sort of like Fox. If it accidentally comes on my TV, I can't push the button fast enough to get rid of it. So I got to take it in small doses. Let's see. What else we got going on? Oh, yeah. We want to talk about our favorite justice of the Supreme Court. I'll let you start that one. I'll just follow through. How does that sound?
Yeah. And we're talking, of course, about Clarence Thomas. In case that wasn't obvious. Since we talked, I was looking into that a little bit, and since we talked earlier this morning. And Lawrence Tribe has been tweeting about it, and Lawrence O'Donnell picked up on it. I don't know if you saw his piece on this. But there actually is, as I think most people know, there are no cool rules. The common wisdom is that each justice makes his or her own decisions about recusing and all that, and there's nowhere else to go from there. But as Lawrence Tribe pointed out, and I was not actually aware of this, there is actually a federal statute which he cited that does require a justice to recuse when either the justice or the justice's spouse might have an interest in the outcome of a case. As everybody should know, Clarence Thomas's wife, Jenny Thomas, is a conspiracy theorist of the highest order, by the way. You know, she'll actually recirculate theories like, you know, the Biden family, you know, Hunter and Joe and the rest, that, you know, they're all going to be arrested and they're going to be shipped to a container ship off of Guantanamo Bay. And that's where they're going to be held. I mean, this is the kind of nuts stuff that Jenny Thomas is into. She's also a big time participant in the effort to overthrow the 2020 election. She was present in Washington at the Ellipse on the morning of the insurrection. So, I mean, her fingerprints are all over.
Coming, she left.
Yes, right.
Knowing what
right.
was coming, she left.
Right. Yeah, she's all over, though. She's everywhere. So she's not a bit player. She's a, yeah, she's a major player in the entire conspiracy. And that's what that is. It's a massive conspiracy with multiple prongs, one of which is violently overthrow the government, but others, including pressuring state officials to change election results, sending fake sets of electors to the Electoral College. I mean, all multiple prongs of the same central conspiracy, which is to end American democracy. She's a major player. Okay, so Lindsey Graham is also a major player, right in the same circle. He actively tried to get Georgia officials, that's his major role in this, tried to get Georgia officials to reconsider and recount and, you know, whatever, find the votes for Donald Trump.
And North Carolina.
Yeah, and North
Carolina. He made
calls
to both
right.
states.
Yeah. Being a senator from South Carolina, we should add.
Yeah.
And he has been ordered by federal courts to answer questions in front of the grand jury in Georgia that is investigating the attempt to corruptly interfere in the election results there. He filed a motion in the Supreme Court knowing that Clarence Thomas, who's married to Ginny Thomas, is the justice on the Supreme Court who is going to rule on emergency motions out of that circuit, which is the 11th Circuit, moved in the Supreme Court to have the Supreme Court block the lower court order forcing him to testify in Georgia. Clarence Thomas, and it should be noted now, in almost all cases with these motions, if a justice does refer a matter to the court before issuing the order will say that. It will say, this matter, right, having come to justice such and such and by him or her forwarded to the entire court, right, and then to give you the order or the order on the motion. This order does not say that. It does not say that the matter was referred to the court. Now, it probably has been now, but it wasn't before he issued the order. So he, on his own, being married to one of the major players in this conspiracy, ordered a temporary halt. So he did not recuse himself, remove himself from this case. That ethical lapse, to put it mildly, is absolutely breathtaking. I want to just add one more thing I learned in the last hour. One of the people on Donald Trump's call to the Georgia Secretary of State, and we're all talking about the same operative set of facts, was a person named Cleta Mitchell. That was a person who was on the call with Donald Trump and the Georgia Secretary of State. That's the person Ginny Thomas cites most in her texts to Mark Meadows. Again, I mean, the fact that he ruled, the fact that he issued that order, no matter how he votes ultimately, the fact that he issued that order without recusing himself when his wife is this deep in this conspiracy, if people still have faith in the Supreme Court, and I hate to say this as a lawyer, you need to reconsider. We've got to get public pressure on the Supreme Court to stop this nonsense.
Right.
Anyway, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, first of all, we also know that there are different alternatives for, although we pretty much know why, but there is more than one why. One why would be he just wanted to do whatever he could to help Lindsey Graham avoid testifying because he is a target for his call, and he would be asked questions about his call to North Carolina because of his excuses. I was doing research. They're going to get him pinned down to everything he talked about in order to get the people that he talked to and to testify that's just not true, that's not what we talked about. And so he's concerned. If he tells the truth, he'll be indicting himself. If he tells the truth, he'll be the one question that I want answered, forget everything else. I have one question I want Lindsey Graham to answer. When you made the call to Brad Raffensperger, Secretary of State of Georgia, in 2020, did you do it because you were asked to do it by the then President of the United States, Donald J. Trump? He doesn't want to answer that question. He does not want to be a witness against Trump. He does not want to admit that he was involved in a conspiracy. He doesn't want to do any of those things. And he knows if they hand him a youth immunity agreement, he will have to testify about those things. He will not have a Fifth Amendment privilege anymore. And he can still be indicted. So there's a no-win scenario there. So I can see at this point, Ginny comes home and says, you got to – he calls up Ginny and says, I got this petition here. Lindsey wants to go to the Supreme Court, needs to stay. And Ginny's saying, are you out of your mind? Of course you're going to give it to him. Otherwise, don't come home tonight. Now, that's one. And the second part is I have no evidence to say that. I just imagine it in my mind. So the first one is he did it on his own because that's what he does for Republicans. He helps them out. He helps them destroy the government that he has sworn to uphold and protect. The second is that he took it to the other justices, lobbied them, and feels he has 5 votes to help Lindsey get out from testifying altogether. Because the standard for issuing a stay is that it's likely that the petitioner will prevail on appeal and will prevail in the underlying litigation, which is the same thing in this case. That's the second scenario. The third one is very simply this. He did it to give everybody a chance to sit down and say yes or no and just issue a quick order from the court. That's not his way. I discount that almost as much as I want a discount on a used car. I'm not paying full boat. So I discount that. I think that the problem is that he is the most corrupt justice we have had. Are you listening, Clarence? I'm waiting for the letter. You are the most corrupt justice we've had since Abe Fortas. You are the most unethical we've had since Abe Fortas. And that was almost 60 years ago. That's who you are. I will appear at your convenience, sir. But don't expect me to apologize, and don't expect that I'm going to say anything different. You are corrupt. End of story. You are much kinder than I was, Brendan. Okay. Hey, just call it what it is. You didn't take $20,000 like Abe Fortas did. That's true. But it's still, okay, no, let's forget it. We know what he is, and we know where he comes from, and we know how he got there. And we're going to talk about how he got there in a couple of minutes because he's about to end the way that he got there. And anybody who says he did not get everything he got out of life from affirmative action all the way up to getting being the only conservative black judge that they could find to put on the Supreme Court to replace Thurgood Marshall, you're just out and out wrong. Okay, so one more thing about Donald that I wanted to raise, and then we'll get back to the Supreme Court. I think I mentioned something about this last week, but I really need to talk about it again. This attack by Donald Trump, by his post on his Don't Believe Your Lying Eyes, Believe My Truth site, on Jews in America, because they have a dual loyalty and they care more about Israel than they do the United States. And that they better, quote, get their act together by giving money to Republicans before it's too late. It was nothing more than a shakedown of American Jews to get donations from them. I mean, how you say things like this only feeds into the idea that you are the Nazi we all thought you were. That when the guy that's running for Senate in Ohio against Ryan, J.D. Vance, called you the American Hitler, he wasn't wrong. You are the American Hitler, Donald, or the wannabe Hitler. If you listen to parts of the tape, he continues to urge that he is the only one that can solve all of these problems. You know, if that's not an anti-Semitic threat, I don't know what it is. And this is a guy who, by the way, his grandchildren have rarely, if ever, been seen in his presence. And I think because they're Jewish, and tolerated his son-in-law because his son-in-law had more money than he did, and he needed his son-in-law's help to get loans from the Saudis or other places, and he tolerated him. Tells you everything you need to know. Trump said the following in 2020. I think any Jewish people who would vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or a great disloyalty. To who? You, Donald? Or the United States? I think it's just you, but you think you are the United States. This tweet that he put out has me so incensed that I can't drive a car while I'm listening, while I think about it. I don't even have to hear it. I just have to think about it. Sorry to steal your thunder there.
That's okay.
Okay, it's just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my answer. Any Jew who would vote for this anti-Semitic Nazi is disloyal not only to the United States, they're disloyal to who they are themselves. They're self-hating people. How you can give money to him because he'll lower your taxes? Really? And feel comfortable because he's gone after every other minority group except for Jews? Our turn is coming. If this guy ends up in the presidency, I promise you our turn is coming. And watch how fast Ivanka becomes a Christian again. I'm sorry. If you're Jewish in this country, you have no business voting for this guy. Absolutely none. And if you do, you're a traitor to yourself. Jews for Trump. That's like Jews for Hitler. When somebody tells you who they are the first time, believe them. And he has told you who and what he is. Just because he didn't use the term Jew before, he now has. He's threatened you, and you're going to pay him back by paying him. By the way, he just got his, you know, he got his airplane back. Did you see that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Guess who paid for fixing his airplane?
Yep.
All the people who gave him money. He's calling it a campaign contribution because he's going to run for president again, and his plane is necessary for his run for presidency. So it's okay that he spent, I don't know, $5 million or more. He redid the entire inside. He did the outside. He put a new engine on. I mean, he did millions of dollars in work on the airplane. It didn't come out of his pocket. It came out of the PAC's pocket fixing his airplane.
Mm-hmm.
He was a partner in the firm of Scheister, Gunna, Finagle, and Steele. You heard of that law firm, didn't you?
I have now.
Scheister, Gunna, Finagle, and Steele.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In which, when I was in law school and Joe Reed was still teaching property, one of the questions said, you are an associate in the firm of Scheister, Gunna, Finagle, and Swartz. And I was supposed to, you know, everybody's supposed to write a memo on an issue. I wrote at the top of it, I am a partner in this firm. I don't write memos.
Oh, God.
Hey, I wrote an answer. But Joe thought that was so funny, he gave me an A. Those are the days when you had to write your name on the book. It wasn't anonymous. Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah. But it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
He thought that was very funny that I answered him that way. I wrote that and I said, see next page. And that's when I started.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Going back to the Supreme Court, I want to talk about something that I think you read about too. There is a book that was written by a guy named John Farrell, who's a historian. Did a biography of Tip O'Neill and Clarence Darrow and Richard Nixon and Ted Kennedy. And part of his research in writing his book about Ted Kennedy, he got the family to let him see Ted Kennedy's diary. Ted Kennedy kept a diary.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2005, just 4 years before he died, the seat was open that eventually became the seat that Sam Alito took. And Alito was making the rounds because at that point, Ted Kennedy was the most powerful senator on the Democratic side of the aisle. He was the most powerful senator on the Judiciary Committee. And Alito had to have this conversation with him. And so he came to visit Kennedy in his Senate office. And Kennedy started boring in on him on Roe v. Wade, mainly because of the things that Alito had written before. And he asked Alito about it, and his response was, and I'm quoting, I'm a believer in precedents. People would find I adhere to that. He didn't add, except for the ones I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
In the same conversation, when pressed even further, and further trying to assure Ted Kennedy that Roe would be okay, he said, quote, I recognize there is a right to privacy. I think it is settled law. Close quote. Well, Ted Kennedy was not convinced and raised a memo that Alito had written as a lawyer in the Reagan administration Justice Department And Alito kept telling him, don't worry about that. Don't put stock. I was a young lawyer. I was just trying to get promoted. You know, I was giving them what they wanted. I was a younger person, quote unquote. Quote, I've matured a lot, close quote. Those answers did not convince Ted Kennedy that Alito was telling him the truth. And he ended up voting both in the committee and on the floor against Alito's confirmation. And that was in 1985. Here's an expression, and you'll have to excuse my French, everybody. But don't bullshit a bullshitter. Kennedy wrote in his diary, he did not believe what Alito said. He did not believe him, not a lick. And if anybody knows anything about trying to lie your way out of trouble, it was Ted Kennedy. Okay? I'm sorry. As much as I liked his politics, he just lied. Okay? Nothing he said made sense. I'm one of those who will admit that. That's why he could never be president. The best of those three was Bobby, and I don't even want to think about how history would have been different if Sirhan hadn't done what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But this, Alito was known to Kennedy to be a liar back in the mid-80s. And then was known to be a liar in 2005. Like I said, don't BS a BSer. They see right through you. And Kennedy saw right through him. If nothing else that Ted Kennedy did, he showed great judgment in saying no to Sam Alito, even though he got outvoted. Think about where we would be if the other senators had listened to him. Sam Alito wouldn't be on the court. He would not have written the Dobbs decision, which is a complete repudiation of everything he said to Ted Kennedy. And you think these guys tell the truth? You don't think they'll lie to get to where they want to go? Gorsuch writes a whole book on stare decisis to convince everybody what a moderate he is, and he's thrown away his own book. Kavanaugh lies through his teeth and puts on an angry front like that he learned from Clarence Thomas, and I still believe Anita Hill. These guys lie. They just do. And then they wonder why the court has lost its shine. How people just don't respect them anymore, because they could respect when you ruled against them if it was for real. I read this thing and I don't know. And I'm sure the Alito's answer would be, I've grown up being on the bench. I understand now what I have to do and what's important to me. That's crap. That's the way you always felt, Sam. Just waiting your turn. Your dissents tell us everything we need to know about you. Okay. We went back to the Supreme Court. I'm done with that now.
Well, that's what a difference between Ted Kennedy and Susan Collins, right?
Yeah.
You know, just I just never forget her coming out in support of Kavanaugh saying, oh, you know, he assured me, you know, he just assured me. And unlike Ted Kennedy, who said, I don't believe him, she said, I do. I do believe him. And here we are. So
why is it, and if that's true, if she's so outraged, why wasn't she the one to file articles, ask someone to file articles of impeachment over in the House? Why didn't she come out and demand his resignation? She knew. That's crap. She took political coverage by saying that because of the pressure she was under to say no. Just awful. You know, everybody talks about how reasonable she is and how, you know, she's, you know, middle of the road and always speaks the truth. No, she speaks and then her votes belie what she says. So she's just another liar. That's all. What else did we have on in store for us today?
Oh, God.
You had a list. I didn't have a list.
No. Well, you're the one who watched the DeSantis-Charlie Crist debate last night.
Oh,
we only got a couple
yeah.
minutes left, but maybe you should talk about that.
Oh, yeah. DeSantis obviously was DeSantis. He's a bully. Everybody knows he's a bully. He got called a bully twice. I think it was twice during the debate. He was called a bully again this morning by Charlie when he was being interviewed by Mika and Joe. But he was substantially uncomfortable. They replayed. It was really funny this morning. They replayed the moment when Charlie confronted DeSantis over something about, you know, not being around and not being really concerned about the people of the state of Florida. Why will you commit tonight, right now, that you will complete your four-year term as governor, and as opposed to running for president of the United States? And DeSantis sat there like somebody just put a sour, you know, lemon drop in his mouth with his confused doe in the headlights look like, what am I going to say now? Refused to answer, even though they weren't allowed to ask each other questions. Refused to answer whether twice he was asked and twice he refused to answer. I mean, just sat there and said nothing. I mean, literally just sat there and stared at the camera with his sour look on his face like, are you finished yet? Are you finished yet? Because I got this zinger for you. And then he said, and then his answer was, the only old gray-haired donkey that I want to get rid of right now is you, Charlie Crist. Donkey meaning Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Couldn't help himself. Throughout the entirety of this debate, could not help himself from being mean and taking shots at everyone and anyone. And anytime he was asked a question he didn't want to answer, he'd just turn around and blame everything on Biden. When he was asked whether it was appropriate to use government money for his little publicity stunt, he talked about immigration, but he never answered the question about spending the money because he's under investigation. He's under criminal investigation for misuse of government funds. And if he answers the question and says yes, he's admitting that he knew he was using government funds, all of a sudden, he's got a problem. And what's he going to do, say, no, I shouldn't have done that? He's never going to back down. He's going to double down. But if he says, yes, I think it was an appropriate use of the money, the indictment will tell him that's not so. He was told you can't answer that question, not just because you're going to look like a fool if you do, but number two, you're going to get indicted. You're testifying against yourself. That's why he would not answer the question. On merits, knowledge, programs, everything that people should want to hear from a candidate, other than I'm in charge, Charlie won the debate. But it won't move anybody's needle.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. It will not move that needle. I'm looking for, I think it's tonight that Val and little Marco with the small hands do their debate.
Do they have a second
one?
That'll
be interesting. Maybe that's not them. Oh, no, tonight's Fetterman.
Oh, that's Fetterman, right.
Tonight's
right,
Fetterman
yeah.
and Oz.
Yeah.
Okay, that'll be a good one, yeah. too. They've lowered the expectations so low on Fetterman that he's going to look brilliant.
I know. That really was. That's political genius, the way they've downplayed this.
Oh.
We know we're going to get our butts kicked, but, you know.
And it's not our format, and there'll be some words missing. And when he comes across real clear like a bell, okay, and
mm-hmm.
answers the questions and goes after Oz, I mean, people are going to say, wow, he's a lot better than they said he was going to be. He must be okay.
Right.
Okay. Friggin' brilliant. Jeez, why did you just say he's going to carry him in on a stretcher? I mean, I wouldn't want to see a guy carrying a stretcher with him on it, though. Yeah, big
no,
guy.
No, right. He is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's got to weigh 300 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm not carrying that stretcher. Okay,
right.
No, not me. Okay,
yeah, right.
Get a bunch of pro wrestlers to come in and do it.
Yeah.
Okay, we're past our 11 o'clock. You've got a meeting, and I've got a meeting. It's 11:02.
Yep.
So I'll see you at 2 o'clock. I guess we have a meeting. Yeah, we do a lot of that these days. Okay, so
lots of meetings. Yep, meetings about the meetings, and more meetings.
And sending out announcements about the meetings.
Right.
Putting them on the calendar for people to punch yes, so it's on their calendar.
Yeah, okay? That's right.
It's a lot of meeting. Okay.
Yeah.
We probably have more meetings than there is meat in a butcher shop. Okay.
All right.
I will see you at 2 o'clock or something like that, whenever we're supposed to be there. Hezzy, I hope you're okay. I know you hung up and you left it all to us. I hope you're okay. And we will be, we'll see the rest of you in a week. It will be a week before Election Day, and hopefully there'll be something else to talk about besides the election.
I'm sure there will be.
Take care of yourselves. Okay,
all
take
right.
care. I'll talk
see
to you
soon.
Later, okay, pal?
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.